From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, our weekly look at politics and public policy. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the ever-able editor of Capital Weekly.
It's a lot of vowels.
It is a lot of
ever
vowels.
Ever-able editor.
Ever-able editor here in the studio with me. Late Thursday afternoon. It's late. It's later than we normally tape our podcast.
It's drinking. It's cocktail hour.
I was sitting in court all day, which is part of what we have to talk about.
The restraining order thing?
Oh, Anthony, you card, you. So the gift that keeps on giving, the state budget, continues to be our dominant story on these podcasts.
Oh, it ain't over.
It ain't over. But a different part of the budget, obviously, because we've been talking about how we're going to have to go to the ballot on May 19th of late in the special election, where the six budget-related ballot measures, 1A through 1F, we don't make Anthony repeat all of them.
I could do it. I'm up on them.
You're up on them now.
Uh-huh.
Go for it.
Spending cap.
1A.
Education reimbursement.
1B.
lottery borrowing.
1C.
Prop 63, the mental health, that's E, right? Mm-hmm. Go back to D would be Prop 10, the tobacco tax borrowing.
Right.
And then the no pay raises when it's cloudy outside.
Which is 1F.
Yes.
Though I would say that the tobacco tax and mental health aren't borrowing because you don't have to pay it back.
Right. Well,
any fundamental premise of the word borrow
borrowing,
is to pay back.
Stealing,
transferring.
You know, okay.
Transferring. Okay. You want to use the words that are part of the campaign. But words is all about what we have. Words is the news for today. Words is the news.
Wow.
English.
And Greece is the word.
Words are the news.
Yes.
Okay. The point is, two of these measures were challenged in court over their title and summary, the thing that voters get to see when they get their guide and when they go into the voting booth on the ballot.
Or when they're polled by the field poll.
Exactly, when they're surveyed.
Okay.
So 1A, which is the spending limit, and 1E, which is the mental health money transfer.
See, now I mean—
mental health money transfer.
It's just, is it the spending limit or the spending cap? Is it spending reform, budget reform, or not? And this was what was...
this is all the semantics that we'll be playing for weeks.
Yes.
Spending limit cap. I choose to use both now. 1A and 1E were challenged in court on Thursday, the day that we're taping this, because the argument was that the legislature had basically written a title and summary that was favorable to their plan, to the voters voting yes, that would convince the voters, that was not objective, convince the voters to vote yes.
And this is a little detail that about the election we're going to have. Because all of these measures were placed on the ballot by the legislature gets to write the title and summary for all of them instead of the attorney general.
Effectively going around the state election laws.
Right.
And also limiting the amount of time they were on public display. And also in this
12
case,
minutes.
Limiting who could write the ballot arguments against
them.
Pick their own people to write the arguments effectively rather than the public getting to come in and write an argument against
them. It's funny, if you look at the text, if you download the text of the spending cap proposal, the education proposal, Prop 1B, which I wrote about in Capital Weekly this week. If you download the text of the ballot initiative from the Secretary of State's site, it has pen marks in it. It's scratched out. It was like
all of them actually.
Yeah.
It was fun. I was doing the same thing, looking at them online, and it's like the lottery one, 1C, thing. And it really just – it felt like the middle of the night, like where I was a few weeks ago, like where we were.
Right.
Okay, so so here's what happened in court today if you missed this. And boy, don't you really get into the nitty-gritty of this. But effectively what happened on the mental health transfer, 1E, both sides agreed out of court. And literally we're in the hallway with a yellow legal pad writing a title and summary and scratching things and agreeing to it. It was – nothing like last
scratching
minute.
Sound effects.
But they agreed to change it rather than the judge having to issue a ruling, a Sacramento Superior Court judge. And so it more clearly now tells the voters that this is money being taken from the Prop 63 mental health funding initiative plan.
Right.
Which basically was a tax on millionaires to fund mental health programs.
1%.
And the argument was that perhaps it wasn't clear enough that this was money from the Prop 63 account. And now I think it's clearer. I mean, it may be a small change, but it's clearer nonetheless. The big battle discussion in court today was the 1A, the spending limit cap thingy.
Which is really the big kahuna for this election.
Because it's the one that's the longest lasting.
And if 1A isn't passed, then the election or the education measure 1B automatically fails. And it's really going to be the centerpiece of this campaign.
And one of the things that happens if 1A passes or fails was part of the court battle today about taxes. Because we know if 1A passes, the temporary tax increase lasts longer. The personal income tax part and things like that.
Vehicle license fee.
Yeah. And if 1A is defeated by the voters, the tax increase is shorter. It's fewer number of years than it would be if the voters say yes to 1A.
Two instead of five.
Two, five, or four.
Details.
But so one of the arguments that the challengers said is that, look, if you're going to have the voters consider 1A, they've got to know that their taxes are going to go up and stay up longer, rather, if they approve 1A. And then a second argument against the ballot language was that it used words that weren't impartial again, that it used words talking about that 1A would limit future overspending. And the argument from the lawyers representing the critics of this said, well, that's a subjective term. Some people think it's overspending. Some people think the government should spend on those programs.
It's undertaxing.
And another one was a word that you and I as journalists hear a lot about people debating in politics, the word reform, and whether or not it should say this is reform of the budget system or if this is just change,
right.
That reform could be thought of as a positive thing rather than just a neutral thing.
It's ameliorative.
Wow. Easy for you to say. So the judge basically kind of split the baby, which is kind of a really ugly term, but you hear it lots of times.
Yeah, depending on the baby.
The judge said some of the words had to change, some of them were okay, and he did not agree with the critics who said you've got to mention more about the taxes. So there is going to be no additional language about the tax increase in Prop 1A. But the term overspending got changed to just spending, future spending, and the word reform got taken out, and it'll just now say it's change. Another one that came up that was a part of the whole court battle, because I sat in there forever, I have to talk about it apparently, is the notion of a rainy day fund, that it says it creates a rainy day fund. And the critics said, well, rainy day sounds like, you know, a rainy day fund sounds like a good thing. Maybe some people don't think this is a good thing. The judge said, the judge basically said, I don't think it's misleading. It's commonly understood. We're going to leave rainy day in the title. So, again, I think it's a mixed victory. You're going to hear from both sides. You and I were talking about this before we started the podcast. We're already hearing from the two sides saying, you know, the judge did the right thing. We won.
Right. And you know, look, this is a very short election season. May 19th, 7 weeks now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a very low turnout election. There's no other election scheduled in the middle of May in an odd-numbered year. And I mean, the title and summary, we've seen where title and summary can be important to a ballot measure. But I think there are going to be a couple other things that are going to be more important. The big question is whether there will be any funded opposition to any of these measures, predominantly the spending cap.
Yeah, that is the political question. It may not be the policy question about what to do, but that is the live or die. Is somebody going to put up money against these?
That's the big issue. And then the other issue is, you know, we've seen a political group form that the governor's political team is involved, trying to package all the measures together as one large
enchilada
package,
burrito,
right? The way it's the budget solution, and they don't want to start talking about details because the polling is beginning to show that once you start talking about the details of the plan, what support there is for all of these measures, which is above half for all of them now, erodes very quickly.
It is a burrito. It's a budget burrito.
It's
better to sell it as
1A,
a burrito.
1A is
than,
the beans and rice and
but rather than saying, well, the salsa is not really that good.
I don't like sour cream on my burritos.
Yeah, sour cream I don't like. Yeah. It's just a burrito. Eat it or don't eat it.
See, insta metaphor. There, we were like, I feel like I've been present at the birth of something
when
magical.
When you hear this in the media from now on, that it's a budget burrito, you know
remember.
What to think. Me. No, not you.
John.
Okay. He's pointing at himself.
I was pointing at you the long way.
Okay.
Like all the way.
But anyway.
So the money question is the big one. And I think most of the attention is focused on the service employees union, who have been the most vocal opponents of the spending cap. The question is whether they'll spend money against it and how much. That's going to be huge. The other one that I think is going to be really interesting to watch is the role of the governor. Remember, you know, we saw a new poll this week that showed the governor's popularity way down.
Mm-hmm. Quite as lowest it's ever been, which was the 2005 special election, but very close.
It's in the mid-30s.
Very,
right?
Very close, yeah.
And the question, and, you know, I've talked to some people who indicate that the governor being out front as the pitch man for these ballot initiatives might actually hurt the initiatives. And so,
but who would be the pitch man in his place?
Well,
I mean, be better?
You know, if you can get whatever
firefighters, and
teachers, and nurses, right?
Yeah.
That, I mean, I don't know if
not nurses,
those folks
but
are involved. Well, I don't know if the teachers are involved.
Right.
We can talk about that a little bit too.
Go ahead.
But it's going to be interesting to see how this plan is sold politically. And these are very important, very big decisions that are going to have to be made very quickly. And I think there's a lot of ego involved. The governor still probably believes he's the most effective pitch man for these things. But it didn't go so well 3 years ago. And we'll see what happens this time around, what sort of strategic decisions his campaign advisors make.
Well, and I want to talk briefly, too, about the measures themselves, because there's six measures. But the more that I have sat and thought about them, I'm curious what you, old wise editor of a local newspaper, thinks. But 1A and 1C, I think, are the two to watch in this, the spending cap and the lottery proposal, for different reasons. The spending cap is the systemic big change to the budget process. Good or bad, you like it or don't like it, but it is a big systemic change, and it is the big, and it's probably the legacy issue that Arnold Schwarzenegger would see out of this out of this election. 1C, which is the $5 billion of lottery borrowing, is the biggest immediate impact of all of the six measures. If the voters say no to the lottery, and the field poll this week indicated that they are under 50%, which is a bad place to start for a ballot measure.
Right.
If the voters say no to that, that's a $5 billion hole in the $40 billion solution that was just agreed
immediately,
to.
Immediately.
And so I think those two are the two really to me to watch for different reasons.
Right.
Big picture and immediate problem or success. And again, going back to the lottery one really quickly, you know, you mentioned how short the time schedule is. And I mean, you think about, you know, what did we say, 7 weeks? Is that what you said about?
It's, yeah. What, yes.
7 or 8 weeks.
I'll do the math while you talk.
But the point is, in a traditional campaign, say an election that happens in November, that's like the end of August, Labor Day. That's the home stretch of a campaign typically. You've got a measure like the lottery that's under 50 with 7 weeks to go or
six,
so.
Six and a half.
Okay, there you are. But you've got a measure like that that's below 50 in a statewide poll, and it's probably not going to be the centerpiece of the campaign because, as you've already talked about, this 1A spending limit, spending cap, is really going to be kind of dominant, it would seem like, in the political messaging.
And that's the burrito pitch, right? I mean, that's the case for the burrito, right? Where you wrap them all together.
But I'm saying if the chicken falls out of the burrito, then it's just a bean and cheese burrito.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to watch this. From my vantage point, 1A and 1C are the two really interesting ones to watch.
Right.
And you read now that I'm like by association or lack
the
of
third most it, important.
I was gonna say by lack of by not mentioning it, you wrote about 1B,
right,
which was the extra money for education for this week.
Although, you know, to your point, 1B doesn't matter what happens to 1B if 1A fails because then 1B is automatically not enacted.
And I think there's this feeling, by the way, if you don't know 1B, it's basically is it $8 or $9 billion?
It's a $8 billion repayment to schools over time.
Suffice it, well, we could debate that point, but it's $8 billion more for schools than they would be getting under the budget agreement that was crafted the other week. And what I was just going to say is that it seems to me as though the education community would go after that money one way or the other in court or at the ballot box.
No, and they said as much.
But it seems cleaner to do it at the ballot box than try to maybe you don't win a court battle over it.
So. Perhaps, or you can open a two-front war there. But you know, it could potentially blow another $8 billion hole in the budget. Essentially, it has to do with the mechanics of the formulaic nature of education finance. But there's a disagreement between the education community and the governor over how much money is owed to the schools. The governor's number is about $8 billion less than the schools say the state owes them. And they essentially agreed to punt on that question and put the $8 billion into a ballot measure. They allowed the voters to decide. If the voters reject the ballot measure or reject the spending cap, which is linked to the ballot measure, it's going to end up in court. You know, I've talked to the Teachers Association and And they've said as much, that this thing's heading to court if 1B goes down or it's
not. Did you get any indication of whether they're going to be great big rah-rah cheerleaders for this campaign to pass these measures,
well,
or not rah-rah, or we support it, but we're not going to spend a lot of political money? I mean, that probably hasn't been decided.
I spent a lot of my day today talking to people in the Teachers Association who are very concerned with my characterization of the union support for Proposition 1A, the mm-hmm. spending cap. Silly me to think that 2 plus 2 equals 4. In this environment, it clearly doesn't.
It's almost okay. Kind of humorous way to think, since we're talking about education.
Right. Well, yeah, silly me. It's fuzzy math. But but Prop 1B, as we've mentioned, is only enacted if Prop 1A is supported. So follow my logic on this one.
Okay.
So the Teachers Association is sponsoring Prop 1B. They wrote the ballot arguments. They are funding the campaign. They have their own campaign consultant running a separate campaign specifically for Prop 1B. They're spending money on Prop 1B. It means $8 billion for them, and it's only enacted if Prop 1A passes. So I wrote it was likely that the Teachers Association would wind up supporting Prop 1A. Well, I can't tell. Before 9 o'clock this morning, I had 5 phone calls about my characterization of the union support for that.
But the reason you got that pushback is because what you and I both have heard a lot is that 1A is a complicated, it's very complicated political bedfellows,
right,
there.
Right.
And a lot of the other labor unions are very leery of 1A.
Extremely.
And the teachers would be, in a perfect world, leery of 1A as well. And so now you've got this weird relationship between, you know, from union to union. And
right.
So,
and it was, yeah, part of the strategy of crafting these measures, I think, was to drive a wedge, for lack of a better term, in between the teachers union and the service employees, who are the big players and the big funders of most Democratic campaigns in the state. And, you know, and I think that these organizations internally, there's a lot of internal politics that they're wrestling with. And the short timeline is playing into all of this. You know, the CTA, the Teachers Association, is going to be taking formal positions on all the ballot measures in 2 weeks. And the Service Employees Union, likewise, in about two to three weeks, will be taking a formal position on these measures. In the meantime, there's lots of polling going on. There's lots of phone calls. There's lots of talking. I mean,
it is the discussion around town about, yeah, how this is all going to play out.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, this is not like we're 6 months away. This is 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And so I think that
it's like the recall, almost, kind of.
Yeah,
like
it does.
Where everything had to be accelerated and decisions had to be very, very fast.
Right. And this train is leaving the station. And I think
how many metaphors?
And we could go on for a while. It's time to get on the bus.
This burrito is getting served to the customer.
It's been grilled.
Okay,
do you grill? You like the? Never mind.
Yes.
So
that's the Taco Bell burrito. Please go ahead.
If they can capitalize on it, I think it's an advantage to the yes side, to the governor's team, who wants to push these all through and jam it through quickly. If they can get the messaging out, because there is such disarray among potential opponents of these individual measures.
And yet, the longer that could go on, too, you could also make the argument that the less time you have to convince to push the voters off of where they could be. Which is a I don't know what it is, I don't like it, no. Because the polling, you know, the field poll, which, again, it's one poll, it's one statewide survey, different people like the field poll methodology, different people don't, but I'll put that to the side for the moment. Let's not forget, the field poll asked, if you knew that 1A was linked to your taxes going up for longer, what would you do? The support for 1A cratered. It just completely fell off when they added that to it.
Right.
If you have enough money to make that case, and it may not take a lot of money, as we talked about last week, you've got a real campaign.
Yeah, and they think, you know, on the messaging, and then some opponents of Prop 1A. It's a weird alliance of labor unions and conservative groups as well. They say once you start linking the governor to Prop 1A, especially among conservative Republicans, I mean, support for the spending cap falls way, way off.
Because we saw that in the governor's approval ratings as well. He's really got trouble in his own Republican Party.
Right.
And you would, and you could make the argument then in a special election, the people who vote the most are the older, more conservative voters, not necessarily the precinct voters, vote by mail people, and the, play the demographics game.
Well, and the spending cap was supposed to be the Republicans' great victory in the budget negotiations, their big takeaway, and their, this big legacy piece, as you've described it. It's the spending cap proposals, spending limit proposals have traditionally been opposed by Democrats. And so if you can target messaging, I mean, you could have a situation where you have labor unions, you know, who are strongly allied with Democratic groups targeting their messaging, probably not with their name. They probably form some other committee and put a fancy Orwellian name on it and start targeting conservative Republicans to help
to preserve good government in California.
And lower taxes. Right. You know, the ironies, the potential for irony is very, very high.
Well, and the irony factor was high in court today on Thursday because the two petitioners against 1A were Anthony Wright of Health Access, which is a liberal-leaning organization, you know, calling for health care reform and greater access of the social safety net. That's one way to describe them.
Commies, all of them, right? And I know I say that only because I know Anthony is a listener.
And you know Anthony a listener.
Yeah, right,
Twitter
right,
about it.
Right.
And John Kupal, who heads up the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, which is a small government anti-tax organization. These two guys probably could never agree on anything else. I was in the elevator with them, and I told them that in the
all
podcast— Well, John and Anthony.
Yeah.
I was in the elevator with them today, and I suggested that, you know, the Odd Couple, maybe we should start humming the Odd Couple theme on the podcast.
Can that be our fade out music for the podcast?
No, we just have to hum it.
Okay.
You're not going to do it.
Nuh-uh. I might whistle it later.
Dun, 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 dun. Okay, anyway. But the irony, that's enough. That's all you needed, folks. But again, just showing the strange bedfellows of how this is going to play out because the Jarvis Taxpayers Association is opposed to 1A, specifically because of the tax increase issue.
Right.
And so anyway, it's going to be a fascinating campaign. I mean, as much as I'm tired of talking about the budget, how this is going to play out in this short amount of time, it's really interesting.
We're going to have like a ranking of weirdest campaigns that we've covered. You know, 2000 presidential campaign, recall campaign,
2005 special election,
this special election.
Angelita Schwarzenegger. No,
Angelita's Wesley.
Angelita's Wesley. Anyway, so it'll be interesting. And
whatever
and,
that whole Bill Jones thing was a couple of years ago.
and you've got to think, I mean, just to kind of tie a bow on this, you got to think that we're going to know more even as soon as next week. We'll be able to sit here and say, well, it looks like Group X is doing X because they really don't have a lot of time. And you can take formal positions at conventions of your members and stuff, but you're going to have to make decisions before that if you're going to put money up.
Yep.
Yes or no on these things.
And decisions on messaging and things like that. And
yeah.
It's being done as we speak.
Well, let's put the budget burrito to the side and just have one other quick thing since it broke today on Thursday. Side dish, but, you know, political reality, which one of the governor's cabinet members resigned today on Thursday, stepped down. Rosario Marin, the secretary of the State Consumer Services Agency.
Former treasurer of the United States.
Former, name on the dollar bill.
Yes.
Stepped aside largely after a series of articles in the Los Angeles Times questioned speaking fees that she had gotten and whether she had gotten speaking fees that she should get as a cabinet secretary, companies who do business under her agency, whether it was too much money. I mean, it's a long thing. And apparently she's also – some of this is being investigated by the Fair Political Practices Commission. And so Marine – late Thursday, the word broke that she stepped aside. And she was somebody, and I want to just talk about Rosario Marin because, you know, here is a Latina woman in the Republican Party, a demographic that Republicans have wanted to get to in California, someone I spoke to at the convention about Latino politics. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do we make of this it's obviously just isolated and still breaking, but
she's also been a candidate for statewide office,
right.
And hasn't had much success with winning a Republican primary. So I'm not sure that this has any impact on the Republican Party standing in the Latino community.
Right. What about for the governor?
But I think it's, you know, it's a blemish for the governor who prides himself on being ethically pure and that this was a violation of the Schwarzenegger administration's code of ethics. And I think that was ultimately, you know, what brought her down was some pressure from the governor. When these stories started coming out, it was clear that the governor was not there to back her and when she offered her resignation today, he accepted it very quickly.
Okay.
You know, um, I I'm not sure that given, you know, how many people are paying attention to things. I think this is a blip on the radar.
Well, and let me just say, what great day could it have come on for the Schwarzenegger administration, because the news headlines, which we haven't talked about at all, will be dominated by the Prop 8 Supreme Court debate.
Right, the oral arguments
for
today.
Yeah, the oral arguments of whether Prop 8 should be, stricken, right, struck down by the Supreme Court. So that is such a big news headline in the small news world it seems like we have now, that things like this won't get as much
attention. I mean, even the LA Times, which, you know, this is sort of a to put it crudely, a feather in the cap for the LA Times, whose investigation sparked the resignation of a cabinet official. I wonder if this one will be on the front page for even of the LA Times tomorrow. We'll see. I'm sure
they don't have a California section anymore.
Right.
So,
well, yeah. But I mean, on A1, yeah, yeah. I don't think this is front page news any other place in the state, any other paper in the state. We'll see. Perhaps the Sacramento Bee, but I guess we'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah, and we didn't talk about Prop 8, but really I don't know what else we would say. It's before the court. But it does go – it's interesting. It's a way to kind of end this for me, because it does come back to the ballot. And, you know, and the decisions that happen at the ballot, and what are the ramifications of those decisions, and how do they play out with the people who won or lost afterwards. And so we've been spending this whole podcast talking about things to consider on the ballot, and – as we see, they don't always go away when election day is over.
Right. And that increasingly, you know, more and more questions of public policy are being decided in the courts and at the ballot box. And I think that, you know, this week sort of encapsulates that very nicely. Wraps it up like a
burrito.
Hey.
A budget burrito. Yeah, I'm telling you.
There you go.
Budget burrito is going to become the big hot word around Sacramento. All right. That's enough podcasting for now.
Isn't that two words?
Anthony's wearing like a military jacket. I just looked at it and realized.
I'm ready. Well, it's campaign season.
Ah,
right?
Marching.
Campaign. Isn't it? It's a military term.
All right. Say goodnight. for Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll have more of that next time. See ya.